You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, along with Rob Rang. Happy Thursday to all of our listeners. We got another jam-packed show coming up for you. Tons of CBA talk, and we're going to be looking at a couple former, well, I guess we could say they're current, but could be former Minnesota Vikings that might be well-suited to join the Seahawks this offseason. It's speculation season, after all. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The owners have approved a new CBA, and the Players Association now has to ratify it. There are some hurdles that need to be overcome here before we have a new CBA that keeps both sides at peace through 2029, but they've made some significant progress this week. There's a bunch of changes that we need to talk about here, starting with the fact there's going to be additional games. This has been talked about for the last couple years, Rob, that owners have been pushing for that 17th game in the regular season. Players have resisted it. They've been against it. But at the end of the day, eventually the owners were going to get that. It seems to me like for this to be ratified, the players are going to have to be willing to accept that 17th game.
Well, that's what it sounds like, Corbin. I mean, I think that if I remember correctly, then it was still just going to be the 20 total games. So 17 regular season games, now three preseason games rather than that fourth preseason game. I mean, you know, it's still going to be the 20 games. So, I think that's something that the players are going to be able to justify, and agree to. And then let's face it, I mean, even guys who love the process as much as I do, that fourth preseason game is starting to get a little weak. So I think that's something it's a fairly easy sacrifice, especially because we have so many other big things that the players are still going to have to agree to make sure that this CBA gets passed as expected.
I've been against the 17th game up until recently, but now that we're getting rid of that preseason game, that was the one counter argument that I had, is if you can get rid of one of the preseason games, that, like you said, that fourth one, basically it's all reserves. It's one of those things where I know as a media member, we're just kind of waiting and waiting and waiting for that game to end just so you can get to the regular season. So I think they can do what they need to do evaluating players with three preseason games, and you might see a bit more starters out there if there's only three preseason games too. So I think in the end, this can be a win-win. The players obviously are going to want compensated for that additional game, but I think the most significant proposal that has been part of this CBA that the owners approved today is a major realignment in how the playoffs operate. Since 2002, when there was conference realignment, that's when the Seahawks moved to the NFC. Since that point, they have had six playoff teams on both sides. You had four division winners and two wild cards. To me, it was the perfect way to hold a playoff. I love having two byes on each side. Teams have to fight for that. It adds extra meaning to the regular season, but now they're going to be adding an additional playoff team in both conferences, and this is the one thing I don't like about it. I mean, honestly, I don't like the fact that they're changing something that I think is not broken at all, but having only one bye team on each side, I'm not a big fan of that, and I'm not necessarily sure that the players will like that, but at the end of the day, adding this extra playoff game is going to be exciting for fans because now you're going to have six wild card games on wild card weekend, and there's going to be more money trickling down to the players. So, of course, they're going to be excited about that.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot more money coming down. I mean, that's the thing, is that when you start getting into those playoff games, they generate such a rabid viewership that, I mean, we're talking, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to the league. I think this is something else that's likely to be passed. The purist in me, I'm with you, Corbin. I mean, I'd like to see none of these things be changed. I like the 16-4 that they had before. I thought that was, I feel for the bodies of these guys. You know, their bodies are breaking down at the end of the season. I think you could make an argument that they should be shortening the season, not lengthening it, but you know, that to me, it would be my response to the second element of the proposal here, is that, you know, I kind of just put my hands up in the air and just acknowledge that the NFL, like most, are going to look at, like, trying to make more money. and that ultimately is going to mean a longer regular season. It's going to be more playoff teams and playoff games, and everything to try to make as much money as they possibly can, and who can fault them for that?
There's a number of teams that would have been excited to have that seventh playoff team on both sides that maybe narrowly missed out a bunch of times over the last 10 years. I believe the Pittsburgh Steelers would have been a playoff team six times, and they weren't any of those six times. So they've had a number of close calls. And so from that perspective, there will be teams that are excited about that. There's more accessibility. The playoff field widens. To me, it waters things down a little bit. It opens up the opportunity for you to have 8-8 wildcard teams. Who wants that? You're just inviting a mediocre team to the ball. There are some years, though, where you get 10 and 11 win teams that don't make it. Those kind of seasons, having that seventh playoff spot makes a lot of sense. It's variable from season to season. Looking at the Seahawks, since that realignment in 2002, when they moved to the NFC West, they have made the playoffs 13 of the last 18 seasons. So this rule change, really looking back, if it would have happened earlier, wouldn't have had much of a change, much of a bearing on what happened to the Seahawks in the postseason. They made the playoffs under the former alignment anyway. The 5 years they didn't make it, the highest seed that they had any of those five seasons was the ninth seed. So they wouldn't have made the playoffs any of those years. They were pretty bad in those five seasons. But certainly it could impact the future playing in one of the deepest divisions in the NFL, the NFC West. The Cardinals are coming. The Rams and 49ers are both good. This change, if effective next year, as reports are indicating, it would open up the opportunity for the NFC West to get three teams, potentially even four teams, into the playoff field. It is possible now with that seventh playoff spot being added. How crazy would that be if the NFC West got all four teams in 2020?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing, that the timing about it feels a little bit unfortunate. Just from an NFC West perspective, because as you just indicated, there's a possibility that all four teams could be fighting for playoff spot. To me, it's remarkable. Two of the things that I just take away from it, as you just described, was just the Seahawks' consistency, as well as that of the Pittsburgh Steelers, frankly, and just how good those two teams have been throughout this process. This is a rule that I'd rather them not be changing, but it is what it is. If it is agreed to by the players, but this is the one who I think that may wind up actually getting more, blowback, just because of the fact that it is such a departure of what you've done in the past.
My big thing is the lack of the second bye. You and I both know how much that benefits teams being able to reach the Super Bowl. Just look at the Seahawks. All three times they've made the Super Bowl, they were the number one seed in the conference. And now you're taking away that opportunity for the number two seed to get an extra week off. Six of your seven playoff teams are going to be playing on opening weekend. I got to wonder if that impacts how teams handle their decision-making at the end of the regular season. We might see more teams rest starters that are already in the playoffs because they don't have that second bye week to play for. So I think there are some concerns there. That's not necessarily a good thing for fans or for the NFL. We'll have to wait and see if this ends up being ratified. From what I'm seeing from players on Twitter right now, it doesn't seem like players are too enthused about this new CBA that's been proposed. It seems like it's very one-sided towards the owners. There is going to be a revenue bump to 48.5% for the players, but a lot of players are wanting 50-50 down the middle, and it's understandable. The players are the product, so I don't know if we're out of the woods yet. They've made progress, but there's a chance that this could linger, this particular proposal could get shot down, and then they might have to start back from scratch a bit. So we'll just have to wait and see. Got to hope that they can ratify this at some point here in the near future so you can avoid labor strife down the road. But at the same time, both sides have to make sure this is the deal that they want. When we come back from the break, it is speculation season, and today it's all about the Vikings. They got a couple players that are currently on the roster. One of them actually today no longer on the roster, who could be on the move, would be interesting targets for the Seahawks to consider. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, along with Rob Rang. Coming up later in the third quarter, we're going to wrap up our position-by-position group review, looking at the specialists, the kickers, the punters, kick returners, gunners, you name it, everything that's important on the third phase of the game. We've reached the point in the offseason, Rob, where teams start cutting players, players start deleting photos off Instagram to erase their history with their current team, players are opting out of contracts, and with that comes tons of speculation. And this week, from a Seahawks perspective, it's been all about current and possibly former Minnesota Vikings potentially going to the Pacific Northwest. Let's start with the rumor that I believe actually has some teeth to it, and that's partially because this player officially hit the market today, and that is defensive end Everson Griffin.
Yeah, Everson Griffin's a really good football player, Corbin. I think it's an exciting addition to the free agent market from a Seahawks perspective because, you know, it one of your many very well-written articles, at SI, you thought that possibly Jadeveon Clowney has outpriced himself with the Seahawks already. And so the Seahawks are going to be looking for, replacements for Jadeveon Clowney. And I think that Everson Griffin is one of those players who makes a lot of sense. I realize that he's 32 years old, but at the same time, just his physicality, his burst up field, he is a natural pass rusher who has been a very productive player for a very long time. The USC ties, of course, that helped as well. But at the same time, you're also, trying to essentially pull a poison pill on the Minnesota Vikings and taking away one of their best players, because this is a team that in Minnesota that the Seattle obviously has had to go through in the past. And this is a very good team. I really like the way that Mike Zimmer has built that team, has participated in the building of that team. And again, with Griffin, he plays the same type of physicality that Seattle has always preferred. So I think that this is a significant addition to the free agent market that Seattle may be able to exploit if needed.
And the Seahawks are going to have to look at some mid-level defensive ends in terms of price point, especially if they re-sign Jadeveon Clowney, who's looking for $20-plus million a year. They're not going to be able to go out and get Yannick Ngakoue or Chris Jones along with Clowney. If they want to be able to double up at that position, they may need to look at some older players that won't bring quite as much money on the market. And I think Everson Griffin would qualify, a guy that's still a very good player. He had a really nice bounce back season this year. You have to remember in 2018, he had some time spent away from the team. There was a mental breakdown that he had, and it was really concerning for everybody in the organization. He was able to turn things around, though, get the ship righted, came back, had 8 sacks this last season, made his 4th Pro Bowl for the Minnesota Vikings. So he's coming off a very good season, over 70 sacks in his career. He's reached double-digit sacks 3 times in his career. Just a few years ago, had 13 sacks. So still a very good player. I think the biggest reason that there's a good chance that he ends up in Seattle, and this has been referenced a few times today already by reporters with the Vikings, including Ben Gosling of the Star Tribune, Everson Griffin was recruited and played 3 seasons under Coach Pete Carroll at USC. So he's got that strong connection, and Gosling was the reporter that said maybe he'd be interested in bringing his career full circle here and wrapping up his career in Seattle. And from that standpoint, it makes sense. From a scheme standpoint, it makes sense as a guy that you can play at either defensive end spot, still has enough burst to be able to get upfield and get after quarterbacks. So I could see this being one of those players that's available. Even if Clowney is re-signed, there's a possibility they could bring both in and double up at that position.
Well, if they're able to pull that off, then this will be the year that John Schneider winds up getting the award that he also is very deserving of as Executive of the Year. Just because I think it's going to be tough to pull that off. Just because I think Clowney, maybe pricing himself out of Seattle's market, and so Seattle will be looking for some replacements. And if they are able to bring Clowney back, then I just would be surprised if they're going to be able to allocate another big contract to a defensive lineman. But again, if Seattle is able to get both, that would be wonderful from a Seahawks perspective, just because these are two very good football players who would just amp up the physicality on Seattle's defensive line. That's one of the things that I would like about that move. The other thing about Griffin as well, I mentioned trying to steal away one of Minnesota's best players. I mean, Griffin has been one of the guys. I remember him having a sack against Russell Wilson this past season, I believe, where he anticipated Wilson's moves better than just about any defender I've seen. And so again, just kind of the idea of, you know, if you can't beat him, join him kind of a thing. He is the type of player that I think would make a lot of sense for Seattle. But it's an excellent point that you made, Corbin. You obviously you have to do your due diligence and make sure that you feel comfortable with who Griffin is off the field. But with the ties to Pete Carroll before, I feel confident that Seattle would absolutely be investigating the possibility of Griffin as a Seahawk.
And if Clowney has priced himself out, there's always the possibility that searching for that market-setting deal that the Seahawks will be like, all right, we're out. We're not interested in paying that much to bring you back. Then maybe they could go after another top-tier defensive end that maybe will cost a little less. If somebody like Ngakoue hits the market, it might be a little cheaper than what Jadeveon Clowney is going to fetch on the market. And so then it makes even more sense to bring Ngakoue and Griffin in, two different players that can both get after the quarterback. So that might be a type of scenario the Seahawks are looking at too. Why pay all this money for one player? We can go out and get two for just a little bit more. So there's a lot of options this front office is going to have to consider before March 18th when free agency starts. Now, let's get to the other player here that may seem a bit more far-fetched, and that star receiver, Stephon Diggs. I mentioned this a few moments ago, that a lot of times, this is just the world we live in 2020 with social media, and we saw what this looks like last year. When players get disgruntled with their current playing situations, a lot of them resort to deleting every photo that's associated with their team off social media. And that is what Stephon Diggs did this week. He reportedly deleted all of his Vikings-related posts on Instagram, and he's not happy in Minnesota. There may be people listening to this laughing like, why would that mean he's going to get traded? But Jalen Ramsey did that last year, and within a week and a half, he was in a Rams uniform. It is a way that players express their disgust, and they can coax a trade from the team that they're currently on.
Yeah, they can. It remains to be seen if that's what this is about. As you mentioned, Corbin, I mean, it could be nothing. But at the same time, it's exciting because, again, Stephon Diggs is a terrific player. I think anybody who has watched Minnesota knows that what he can do, or from a fantasy football perspective, but just his big play abilities, you know, physically he's similar to a Tyler Lockett. And Seahawks fans, of course, know exactly how critical to Seattle's success Tyler Lockett is. Stephon Diggs has just hit his speed, his ability after the catch. He does drop some balls occasionally, but at the same time, if you were talking about adding an absolutely perfect third weapon to Seattle's offense, maybe even a fourth weapon now, of course, with the addition of the tight end, then Stephon Diggs certainly would be that. So if he suddenly were available in on the market via trade, then we all know that John Schneider and Pete Carroll have been as aggressive as anybody, perhaps even more so than anybody, when it comes to acquiring star talent.
If the Vikings are going to consider dealing Diggs, and all the reports that I've read the last few days indicate that that's not the plan right now, but if they choose to move Diggs, there's going to be a number of teams out there that don't have the receiver situation Seattle has. They don't have Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. There will be other teams that may be willing to hand over more draft capital to bring that player in. To me, I view this as a luxury move, not a need, although it would be really cool to see all three of those receivers out there for Russell Wilson. If this offense is going to throw the ball a little bit more this next year, like Wilson's been begging for here the past few weeks, a couple interviews he's had, he's made it clear he'd like to throw it around a little bit more, then maybe it makes sense to invest in a player like Diggs, who is only 26 years old. He's had over 1,000 receiving yards each of the last 2 years. And you want to talk about a player, Rob, that fits what Seattle loves to do. He had 6 touchdowns, including one in the playoffs this year, of 50 yards or more. He's as good of a deep threat as any player in the NFL today. Russell Wilson is good as any quarterback at throwing that deep ball. So you put him with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, I would hate being a defensive coordinator on the other sideline trying to figure out how to handle that. The big problem here, if you're going to be making a move, Minnesota needs cap space. So they're actually probably excited that Griffin voided his deal, because that just opened up a bunch of cap space. They're no longer in the red. They were in negative $11 million on the cap space spectrum before he made that decision. So they are now in the black. They can start to fix their cap situation up a little bit. So that's one reason there's been speculation about trading Diggs, is he would open up cap space. But he has 4 years left in his deal, and he's got a bunch of signing bonus money that is left to be paid to him. So if they trade him, they're going to create $9 million in dead cap charts. So it'll create some cap space because he has a big contract and you're going to be moving a bunch of money off the books, but still a $9 million dead cap charge. So I don't know that the Vikings, if they could have a small dead cap charge, maybe they'd consider this more, but I don't think they're going to want to trade one of their best players who's in the prime of his career on a team that's in win now mode when you're going to be eating that much money in the process. I just can't see that being something they're interested in doing.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that myself. I mean, I'm a big believer in not only Stephon Diggs, but Adam Thielen, the receiver on the other side as well, both Pro Bowl receivers. But I think that they're Pro Bowl receivers in part because they complement each other so well, and they complement Kirk Cousins so well. You know, but I don't know that either one of them is the full, complete receiver on his own. You know, with Stephon Diggs, as I mentioned, I mean, he just puts the ball on the ground too much, you know, and he has struggled with durability at times, dating back to college. With Thielen, of course, he doesn't have the straight line speed, but both of them are terrific players. You know, they are a perfect fit in what Minnesota does. They're a perfect fit in what Seattle does. They're good football players. So I have a hard time believing that Stephon Diggs is going anywhere from Minnesota, but at the same time, you know, you never know. In the NFL, as Jerry Glanville, you know, says, you know, not for long. And so, you know, you never know what's going to happen in the NFL.
And John Schneider loves going after big fish with trades. I mean, he had a little hiatus for a few years after the Graham trade, but then he went and got Clowney. He's always looking for bargains, and I don't know that you're going to get that trading for Diggs. But if the Vikings get pushed into a corner where they feel like they have to move him, then things could get interesting, especially if the Seahawks were dangling out a first-round pick. I don't think that I would be giving them a first-rounder, but if you could get them to do a second-round exchange, I'd have to strongly consider, even though I think it's more of a luxury than a need. The idea that, you know, Russell Wilson is going to be 32 in November. He's not getting any younger. He wants stars around him. He wants to add, you know, weapons to the offense. If you have those three receivers, Greg Olsen, Will Disley, and the guys in the backfield can catch the ball, Russell Wilson would have no excuse at that point. You got tons of weapons around you. Now let's go see if we can get back to the Super Bowl. You never know when that title window is going to slam shut. It can slam shut in an instant. Just ask Philip Rivers how that's went with the Chargers. I mean, it looked like they were going to be a persistent contender, and then the last several years, they've had a couple decent seasons, but now he's out of town. They've missed the playoffs a bunch, so you got to take advantage of that window while it is open. So I could see Schneider at least exploring, sniffing around a little bit, seeing, hey, you know, is there anything we can do to get Stephon Diggs off your hands? At the end of the day, though, I'd be surprised if he gets traded, if it's to the Seahawks. There may be other teams that are willing to offer more. That being said, Diggs loves Russell Wilson, has an affinity for the quarterback, so that might play a role in trying to orchestrate any kind of deal. It's a lot of fun to talk about this anyway. Coming up next in the third quarter, we're going to wrap up our position-by-position review, looking at special teams and what's next in the ever-so-important third phase of the game for the Seahawks. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on Locked On Seahawks. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, along with Rob Rang. Over the past several weeks, we've been looking at every position group for the Seahawks, revisiting the 2019 season and looking forward at what could be next in 2020. We have officially reached the end of the line, and all that's left, Rob, players that sometimes get forgotten by fans until the kicker misses a game-winning field goal or an opportunity to tie the game, and then that player's the biggest scapegoat. Typically, specialists, they kind of get put off to the side a little bit compared to the offensive and defensive players, but still very critical players. If you want to get to a Super Bowl and win, you better have good special teams play.
Yeah, you better have that good special teams play, as you said. And I was expecting more out of the gate from Michael Dixon, just considering what he did with that all-pro rookie season. But I was impressed by the kind of the resiliency, the bounce back that he had in the second half. I thought he punted the ball much better, much more consistently in terms of accuracy as well as power. And then with Jason Myers, obviously some inconsistency. You know, but at the same time, I thought that his accuracy inside, 40 yards was definitely one of the strong points. It was the longer kicks that was a little bit alarming, just because that had been something that he had been successful with in the past. But to me, a big part of it, I think, has to be the conversation about the return guys, just because that had been such a dynamic part of Seattle in the past. With all due respect to Tyler Lockett, I think that he is now essentially been morphed into your number one wide receiver. And with all due respect, I mean, he deserves that. But at the same time, I think that he took a step back as a return man, and that should be a position that Seattle, whether it be kick returns or punt returns, needs to address a little bit in the offseason.
Yeah, going off what you were saying about the kick return situation, I was making this argument before the season. I was making this argument during the season. It's time to get Tyler Lockett off special teams. You don't have Doug Baldwin there anymore. Yes, DK Metcalf looks like the potential is there for him to become a number one receiver, but Tyler Lockett is your guy right now. First 1,000-yard season for him as a receiver in 2019. He was coming off a career year, almost made 1,000 yards receiving in 2018. He is Russell Wilson's go-to guy. He's such a slick route runner, the quickness, the ability to take the top off defenses. He's tough in the middle of the field. He is your number one receiver. You cannot risk getting him hurt on special teams, especially with the fact that I think the NFL is definitely at a crossroads with the kickoff in general right now. I'm really hoping, after seeing how the XFL is handling kickoffs, that the NFL will try to adopt something very similar, because I feel like it could bring some excitement back to the game on kick returns. 90% of kickoffs go over the goalpost, and it's a touchback. And nobody returns kicks anymore. The rule changes have discouraged teams from returning, whereas the XFL has made it the other way around. They're encouraging teams to return kickoffs. And with the setup of having the players, the kickoff coverage team, already down past midfield, 5 yards apart from the return team, you eliminate those high-speed collisions. I'm hoping the NFL will adopt that so that players like Tyler Lockett, that are electric athletes, have more opportunities to return kicks. So that's really a big thing for me. I want to get him off special teams, in part because I don't want to get him hurt, but also because right now, kick returns especially, punt returners have a little more opportunities to make plays, but kick returners just don't make the impact they did even a few years ago because of the rule changes that have been established the last couple of years in the NFL.
Yeah, no, that's well said, Corbin. I mean, I 100% agree with you there. I hope that the NFL does look at what the XFL is doing with these kickoff returns, because it is taking away what was one of the most exciting plays in football, and has made it one of the dullest. And the NFL again kind of changed tradition. With the PAT, moving the PAT back, because it was one of the dullest plays of football. So I hope that they will recognize that they have now made that the kickoff return. So hopefully they will make some kind of change to be able to showcase some of those dynamic athletes, some of those big plays. I mean, the most electric plays, the ones that can absolutely change games. I think that that's something that to me is essentially is a no-brainer, which is a poor choice of words, obviously, considering the concussion situation. But just I just really believe that there is a way to be safer with that play. The XFL is, in my opinion, is showing a safer way to still make that play something that can be very exciting and be a productive play in football. And then finally, the other thing too is that there's just so many candidates. I didn't want to get too far off of this idea as far as the return guys. I really believe that the future looks bright with Myers and Dixon as your kicker. So I'm going to be focusing in on the return guys. But there's just we've talked so much about the talented wide receiver already in this draft class, and that's where I'm going to focus in on a couple of return guys that I think that might be available to Seattle at varying points of the draft. If you want to go with a big guy, I've been arguing for another big receiver for a while now. I think Laviska Shenault, if you were willing to invest number 27 overall in anybody other than a lineman on the offensive defensive line, then Shenault to me is one of those guys I think that should be a consideration. I think that he can be your kick return guy. He can be your slot receiver. He can be your wildcat quarterback if you want to use him the way that Colorado did. And then James Prochet is a dynamic little receiver. He was a very productive guy, wound up actually leading all of college football, I believe, in receptions this past season for SMU. But it's just how soft his hands are. You know how John Schneider kind of talks, in those glowing terms about Will Disley, soft hands, and all that kind of stuff. That's what Prochet is like. I mean, I just – very rarely, Corbin, have I seen scouting for 20 years have I seen a guy that has just the natural hands that this guy has. And so that's one of the things that that I just love, his hands, his quickness, his acceleration. I think that he can be a very productive receiver and return guy for you, as well as a lot of the other guys that, that are available. There's a lot of small, quick guys out in this year's draft that are going to be available. Although I know that you had a running back that you were particularly interested in.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys in this draft class that really intrigue me as return specialists that also could make some impact on offense. I keep bringing this guy up podcast after podcast, but Jalen Reagor out of TCU had 2 punt returns for touchdowns this year. He's a dynamic athlete in space, can make guys miss, can break through arm tackles. He's tough. He's got really good speed. You're going to see that at the combine coming up here. He's a blazer, and I think that he just fits what the Seahawks want to do offensively. He also would be a perfect fill-in for Tyler Lockett in that return game. So if you're looking for a reason to justify with already having DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett on the roster, picking a receiver really early in the draft, it would be for a guy that is versatile and brings value on special teams, and Jalen Reagor brings that. One other player that I think, you know, you're looking probably in 5th, 6th, 7th round range on this player, Patrick Taylor out of Memphis, running back that I'm not sure how much of an impact he's going to make out of the backfield. Seattle could use some extra depth with Penny coming off a torn ACL and Chris Carson with the fractured hip. Those two guys are supposed to be back, hopefully, by the start of the season, and they're hoping to have them back. But getting some insurance late in the draft would make sense. And Patrick Taylor would also give you a guy that could come in right away and return kicks. He's an explosive athlete, another player that I believe actually has an invite to the combine, so he'll have a chance to show off his athleticism as well. But those are two players at two totally different spots in the draft that would make a lot of sense. There are a number of other guys out there that are decent kick returners as well. There's going to be options. They've still got Travis Homer, and maybe David Moore is going to get a tender on the roster. Both those guys have returned some kicks. I was encouraged by what I saw from Travis Homer back there at the end of the season, so there's still some options that'll be on the roster even without the draft if they want to move away from Lockett, as they should.
No, exactly. And I'm happy that you mentioned Travis Homer, because I 100% agree with you that I just love the aggression that he shows. I mean, there are a few guys who hit the hole harder than Travis Homer, you know, as far as just when he sees it, he attacks it. And I just think that that is one of those skills that could really, you know, result in some big plays, especially if the NFL got, you know, like if the NFL adopted something like the XFL did, where, you know, essentially if you're the return guy in that, the way the XFL has it set up, you make one or two guys miss, you get through that initial wave, and you can really create a big play and be gone, you know, in the snap of a finger. And so again, that's the type of guy, and that's the type of setup that I think the Travis Homer could be very successful in. And so I do think that Seattle is going to look to add some competition to that position. But I was very intrigued, as I was by Moore before, but definitely Homer. I thought that he made some big plays down the stretch that really were eye opening.
Real quick, I want to give a few thoughts of my own. You had a chance to talk about Jason Myers and Michael Dixon, and I fully agree with you with what happened with Michael Dixon early in the year. I'm not sure what was going on, if he just wasn't hitting the football right off of his foot, but he was not getting the hang time. The football just wasn't flying off his foot like it did in his rookie season when he was an all-pro. I thought in the second half he was much more effective getting hang time, getting the air under the football, and he pinned a bunch of kicks inside the 10-yard line. He resembled the player that really lit the league on fire as a rookie, and that's a strong sign going into his third season that he'll be able to rebound and play at that level. And Jason Myers, as you mentioned, he was money between 20 and 39 yards this season. He didn't miss any of his 17 field goal attempts. Up to 39 yards. Where he had issues was after that. From 40 to 49, he went 4 for 7. That's not acceptable. Barely over 50%. That's not what you want from a kicker that you gave a 4-year contract to. And then he was 2 for 4 from 50 plus, which is okay. Those kicks are difficult to make, especially when you're playing in Seattle and it's raining outside. Those are tough kicks to make. That being said, he was 6 for 7 on those kicks the year before in his Pro Bowl season with the Jets. He was 11 for 12 from 40 to 49. He made over 90% of his kicks in 2018. This season, he ended up making 82%. I think it's worth noting that he kicked a lot better in the second half than he did early. Really, the game that changed things, he missed a couple of huge kicks against the Ravens and the Buccaneers in Week 7 and in Week 9, and he really rebounded from those games. Got some momentum making the game-winning field goal against the 49ers, and I thought he was kicking the ball much better down the stretch as the Seahawks went into the postseason, made a few kicks in the playoffs. The one thing that still drives me nuts with him, though, Robin, and this is coming from a guy that can't kick a football further than 10 yards. I could do a lot of things in a football field, but I could not kick the ball. So I have great respect for these guys that go out there each week and kick and punt. It's an extremely difficult job to do. And the guys that are really good at it make it look easy. It's anything but easy. That being said, Jason Myers has missed 19 extra points in his career. That's the NFL record. He has missed more extra point attempts than any kicker in football, and he missed 4 of them for the Seahawks last year. You are making all that money on the, and I know they move PATs back to make it less automatic, but you still should be making way more of those than what he is. So that's one thing that concerns me, the fact he's never had a season where he has made more than 91% of his extra points. Twice he's been under 90%. For an NFL kicker, that's just simply unacceptable.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It really is. I mean, because for a guy as talented as he is, who has the accuracy over his career and field goals, including deep, that clearly isn't a leg strength thing. It's easy for me to say as someone who is not actually going through it, but that sounds like a possible level of concentration kind of a thing, you know. And so I think that's something that obviously he's been very much made aware of and is likely working on it. Although, you do have to be careful and always kind of keep these things in perspective. I mean, obviously they've changed the PAT distance just in the last couple of years. So I think that Jason Myers, if he is able to fix this, I think that he's going to have plenty of contenders looking to steal his throne as the guy who's missed the most PATs in NFL history.
Well, that's something that you have to hope somebody does take the record from. You don't want to hold that one. You're hoping somebody can take that away from you. Most records that you want to hang on to, that is not one of them. But I think the good news, the silver lining here for fans, again, he had a really good second half. So for fans that were disappointed with how he played, fans that were calling for him to be cut, there was a lot of fans out there wanting that to happen. The Seahawks allowed him to stay on the roster. He got some of his guaranteed money a few weeks ago. So he's not going anywhere. Kicking year to year is very variable. So there's a good chance he can come out and be much better in 2020, especially if he can build off how he played in the second half of the season. So the Seahawks should be optimistic where they're at with their special teams. They do need to figure out what they're going to do in the return game. Maybe that's through the draft, maybe another guy on the roster, but get Tyler Lockett off special teams and let him just be your number one receiver. Keep him out of harm's way. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to subscribe to our show on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it is draft season. We were going to do this today, ran out of time. That means one thing. John Schneider is looking for ways to add picks in the draft. We'll bust out a mid-February trade machine, looking at some trade-down options, plus a look at 4 new free agents on Free Agency Friday. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.